perdido. And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU-FM, special double episode this week. That's right. You can listen to us even past the 6 o'clock mark. We've got lots to tell you, lots to show you, lots to catch up on, and live new interviews. I'm glad, in fact, today we're going to be starting out with Yves Engler. Of course, he's the noted Canadian author and journalist, a frequent guest on our program, and he's written an article very recently about Canada's arms exports. So, Yves, thanks very much for being on the program with us today.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
Great. You know, I should tell our listeners that your article is called Canada's Flourishing Arms Trade with Middle East Dictatorships. That's Canada's Flourishing Arms Trade with Middle East Dictatorships. And so article that I caught was on Dissident Voice. It's probably been published elsewhere. I know that last year, 2014, the government of Canada had announced the largest ever arms export agreement in the Middle East, and we have some multi-billion dollar partnerships here. I guess the biggest one, Yves, I guess it's going to some democratic country that's setting a positive example for the region, presumably. So who's our partner and customer primarily for all these weapons?
Maybe surprisingly or not surprisingly, depending on how much you know about Canadian foreign policy, it is not a force for you know, democratic development or progressive change or most of what the vast majority of Canadians would consider to be progressive values or their values. It's actually Saudi Arabia, which is happens to be one of the most repressive governments in the world, both internally and in the region, an incredibly negative force with regards to the Arab democracy movements that flourished in 2011. And basically, the Canadian government, the Harper government specifically, has really ramped up sales and announced a $15 billion or $14.8 billion light armored vehicle sale. Not just a sale, but also a long-term agreement to maintain and I think also train Saudi military, National Guard, actually. It's all quite secretive. But this is the biggest arms deal that Canada has ever signed, a single arms deal in the history of this country. And it's not just between General Dynamics Canada. Most of the weapons were the light armored vehicles will be built in London, Ontario, at the General Dynamics factory there. But it's actually via the Canadian Commercial Corporation, which is a crown corporation where the government appoints the board, and it has become a much more aggressively involved in the global arms trade and particularly in the Middle East, and particularly with the monarchies, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and other monarchies over the region that are viewed as Canadian regimes that are viewed as sympathetic to Canada's geopolitical outlook in the region.
Makes you wonder what our geopolitical outlook is, but you know, you can speculate as to how some of these regimes will use the equipment, but we don't need to speculate. We actually know, because it's my understanding Saudi Arabia did invade Bahrain. They quashed protests there using in fact the very type of LAV that Canada sells them, if I understand correctly.
Again, it's a little bit hard to be absolutely 100% sure of that, but there are images of Saudi light armored vehicles entering Bahrain in 2011 in response to the pro-democracy demonstrations against a 200 plus year monarchy in Bahrain, and the Canada has previously sold light armored vehicles to the Saudis. This goes back, it's not just the Harper government, it goes back into the early 90s, the Khrushchev government. In 2009, also, the Harper government okayed export licenses for up to $4 billion in sales. Again, this was presumed to be light armored vehicles to Saudi Arabia. So yes, we don't need to speculate. We know what these weapons will be used for. Two things: they'll be used for the National Guard in terms of internal controlling, internal dissent, the Saudi National Guard, and they will be used to express Saudi power in the region, and that's a power that is very much antagonistic to the Middle East, to people having a voice, democratic voice to the region really sort of advancing and breaking free of foreign domination. Saudi Arabia is a bulwark of conservatism and really of tied into, it's a US-led empire in the region. So we know what they're going to be used for. We also know this is some big profits for some of the friends of the conservative government. So any consequences for human rights violations are very much secondary to the profit question and the geopolitical support for Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, it's all very interesting because our media was celebrating the Arab Spring, and I remember a lot of television coverage, but they weren't so big on telling us about, when Saudi Arabia was using armored vehicles against civilians. And when that kind of thing happens, usually there's a lot of outrage and there's calls to sanction a government that does that. But of course, instead, we're entering into the largest arms deal in history to provide them with the same type of vehicles and equipment they use against civilians. And as you point out, it's not just Saudi Arabia. So we're becoming a bigger player in the global arms market. I understand there's a Canadian military colonel overseeing one of those large transactions. In fact, according to your article, I think Ottawa sent a naval frigate, the HMCS Toronto, to the UAE as part of one of those weapons exhibitions.
Yep, they did. And then the IDEX, which is considered the biggest weapons fair in the Middle East, is actually taking place in a few weeks now. And already La Presse is just reporting that the Canadian, the CATSI, the arms lobbyist group in Canada, its exhibit is being funded in part by Canadian taxpayers, and that's what has happened previously. So the arms dealers Canadian arms dealers who are going to the Middle East to seek out sales are receiving part of their travel costs and fees for these events paid for by Canadian taxpayers. Also the government ministers have been repeatedly going to Saudi Arabia. It's like 8 or 9 conservative ministers who have visited Saudi Arabia, and what they're doing, of course, is trying to seek. It's often the trade minister, Ed Fast, trying to seek more agreements, contracts for Canadian businesses, both in the in the arms industry, most prominently, but also companies like SNC-Lavalin and Bombardier, who have had billions of dollars in contracts in recent years with Saudi Arabia. It's an aggressive policy that everything from some Canadian tax dollars to Canadian soldiers who train the Saudis on this equipment to Canadian naval frigates being sent there as part of Saudi fighter pilots for the first time training in Canada at the big NATO Air Force training in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. So it's a really aggressive policy. This is not just sort of some business, some Canadian business that happens to come across a desire by Saudi Arabia for light armored vehicles, but this is very aggressive. All of different elements of Canadian foreign policy and trade departments getting behind ramping up military sales to the most repressive government in the region.
I guess you could say Harper's vision of foreign policy corresponds in some way to a vision for Canada. You have the support for these repressive monarchies in the Middle East, and our relation with them is through billions of dollars in weapons, which are used for all sorts of dubious purposes. And over here, you build this constellation or this conglomeration where you have, a naval frigate, naval personnel acting as part of an advertising campaign for Canadian, equipment. And the manufacturers, work closely with the government to ensure that these kinds of deals are negotiated internationally.
For sure. There, I mean, it's aggressive. The one element, a couple years ago, I wrote a piece, on this topic of a sort of side part of the question you just asked about Harper's, support for monarchy. Because of course, people must probably remember that the Harper government added the name Royal to the Canadian Air Force's name, which had been taken out, 40 or 50 years ago. And how they've really gone out of the way to ramp up, the sort of monarchist tradition in this country with the the British monarchy, and so how it was sort of there's a parallel between their support for monarchies in the Middle East and their desire to reclaim the monarchist kind of symbolism in this country. I'm not sure how far I would go with that being what's driving things, but I think there is some small element there of a deference to authority or power that the monarchist symbol, be it the British monarchy or the Saudi monarchy, that I think impresses the current government in Ottawa.
Indeed, and I guess it means something for Canadian values abroad. I mean, when people used to see a maple leaf, they would think of Canada and our weather and our tourists and things like that. And I guess now maybe when they see a maple leaf, they'll think of an armored vehicle shooting at their friends or something like that. Yes, it is unfortunate, but I'm glad you are keeping watch on these things. There's a lot of news stories and there's a lot of crap floating around, but you happen to get to the very most important parts, which is how our government sees itself and its role in the world and the kind of arrangements it makes, the kind of large, significant, policy-defining arrangements it makes. So I thank you very much for cutting through all the fog and bringing us this kind of coverage. So I was lucky to catch that article on Dissident Voice. You may not know offhand where else it was published, but where can people get archives or access to your articles like this one?
Well, this one was on rabble.ca as well, but also on my website, evingler.com. Most of my articles eventually are archived there, and I know that the most of the libraries in Hamilton and in the area have copies of The Ugly Canadian and other of my books that have been published on Canadian foreign policy.
That's right, and I'll announce your latest one shortly. Well, anyway, Eve, thanks very much for bringing us this information, and thanks for being on the program with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye. And that is Canadian author and activist Eve Engler. He is co-author of the recently released New Communist Manifesto, Workers of the World, It Really Is Time to Unite, which is a rewriting of the original, designed to spark debate about new direction for the left and the union movement. You can actually find more information about that at www.newcommunist.com. Bit of an alternate spelling of the word there. Anyway, we're going to take a musical break and we'll be back.